This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. And Adam, we're slowly crawling towards things happening here in the offseason. This is kind of the lull in the storm between the Super Bowl and the Combine. We have the Combine a few weeks away, then free agency about a month after that. And we're going to get into our positional preview for the draft after the Combine, because we felt like we wanted to have all the information that we possibly can have, all the workout numbers, the 40 times, on top of all of the film study that we do. So we're going to hold off on those until after the Combine. So this week, we're going to go through some positional needs. We'll talk a little bit of Brady news off the top of the show. Next week, we'll do a full Combine preview, look at some prospects to maybe watch during the Combine coverage, which is now in prime time, which is great for everybody else except reporters, per usual, but it's now prime time coverage. I think it's 4 p.m. to 11 most of the time, and then I think on Sunday and Saturday it might get a little bit earlier. But they moved it all to prime time, so no more 8 a.m. wake-ups, you know, for the beginning of the drills and stuff like that. But before we get into the football, let's shout out our friends at betonline.ag. The footballs might be packed away, but basketball, hockey, golf, and yes, you can even bet on the Academy Awards, as you can find all the odds with our exclusive sportsbook partner, betonline.ag. Well, not the Academy Awards anymore, but this reads a little bit outdated. They have been in the industry for over 20 years, providing customers with the first-to-market odds and giving you the ability to bet anytime, anywhere. Head over to betonline.ag and use your promo code, our promo code of CLNS50, there you go, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit and have a little fun with some betting action today. But online, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Adam, so you haven't even said a word yet, which is okay. But now let's talk some ball. I want to just preface this by saying that pretty much every Brady report that we hear at this point is just insiders repackaging reports that they've already used, but just saying different words in front of them. But at the same time, we did get a little bit of news this week. The Chargers have decided to part ways with Philip Rivers. That is now official, a team announcement from the now Los Angeles Chargers, saying that the 38-year-old is no longer going to be their quarterback next year. So that opens the door up to potentially Brady now being squarely in the running to go to LA to replace Philip Rivers. And on the flip side, the Patriots potentially being interested in Philip Rivers as kind of a stopgap or bridge quarterback until they find their next guy. What were your reactions just to the Chargers parting ways with Rivers? And do you feel like he's a viable option for the Patriots?
Well, it's interesting because the Chargers is one of those teams that everybody seems to mention when Brady is an option for going somewhere else, right?
Like, yeah.
It's always, oh, well, it's L.A., you know, Giselle wants to be in an L.A. type place.
Right.
And, you know, Brady, you know, he wants weapons and he's got some weapons there in L.A. You know, he doesn't have a
great offensive line.
Yeah. New stadium.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like factors that point to it. I always think that the most obvious choice in situations like this doesn't really pan out. My money still is on Brady coming back. I know that's not the most popular opinion and it's not the hottest take. I still kind of think that Brady comes back. If he doesn't, though, and you want somebody to bring in, Philip Rivers isn't my first choice. If I had to pick somebody, I'll probably get to that a little bit later. But I think that he's somebody that would make sense. You know, he's, I don't know whether or not the Patriots in that scenario, if Brady goes, if they'd want to go young or they'd want to go old. Part of me expects them with the difficulty of the offense or the complexity of the offense and the current status of the team, that I think they would probably go with somewhat of a veteran guy. Now, you know, that's an extreme veteran if you're talking about Philip Rivers. He's been in the league a long time.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's still a pretty good quarterback. Now, I've never thought of him as some sort of transcendent guy in terms of, you know, taking his team to the next level, because the Chargers never really did go to that next level. Then maybe win one playoff game and then get fizzled out. But I think he is somebody who could work. But my, you know, just coming back to it, I still kind of feel like Brady isn't leaving. But, you know, he's looking around and you see Phillip Rivers go and everybody's talking about them. I mean, you know, the Chargers are one of those teams that's been there the whole time. Right now you're starting to see more people bring up the Cowboys, which I think, you know, makes sense too in some respects. But it's all sort of fodder right now. You know, it's just all stuff that's being banded about.
We're in the middle of this stuff renaissance right now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the stuff to verified info is like 99.999% to 1%. You know,
right.
It's just so fun to talk about for so many people though, because Tom Brady's Tom Brady.
In any sport, I can't really think. Maybe basketball is the only sport where we see the kind of player movement that would invite this sort of move to happen. But in other sports, and in football especially, the greatest player of all time doesn't usually pick up and walk out the door
right
on his own accord. That's right. The thing that makes it different about Brady. Joe Montana, of course, got traded from the 49ers to the Chiefs, and they said, we're done with you. Brett Favre, they said, we're done with you. You know, that's a different kind of scenario. Peyton Manning, this scenario, Tom Brady has all the cards. You know, he has all the leverage, and he can say, I'm actually done with you, Patriots, not the other way around. And that's just so unprecedented that it's hard to kind of wrap your head around. I think the thing with Phillip Rivers is a couple of things. With Brady to the Chargers, first of all, again, this is all, I think we're going to look back on this in 6 weeks and laugh at how many scenarios we broke down and how many teams we discussed and money and all this kind of stuff. But Brady to the Chargers, yes, I think that Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, they have some free agents that they would have to bring back. Austin Eckler is a free agent. Hunter Henry is a free agent. Melvin Gordon is a free agent. So not all of their weapons are under contract for next season. But conceivably, they do have a nice nucleus and a nice offense to build around. Their offensive line has struggled mightily in recent years, especially. That's been a kind of constant flux of rebuild along the offensive line. So I do think that that is a partial kind of snag in this. But the biggest snag that I see is that from a coaching and ownership standpoint, the pillars are Brady, Kraft, and Belichick, right? Yeah. And I think Brady is well aware of the fact that in order to win and to get to where he wants to be, which is in the Super Bowl, as an organization, you have to have those three pillars, quarterback, coach, and owner, kind of in place. And you have to have a really good kind of nucleus and a good, just a consistent and something that you can rely upon in those other two arms of that pill of those pillars. Are we convinced that Anthony Lynn and the Spanos family are enough of pillars for him to go and make that move?
Right.
They might have the talent. If we're playing Madden and we're stacking the rosters next to each other, the Patriots offense versus the Chargers offense, you're taking the Chargers offense. I don't think that's, you know, the argument we're having here. But as an organization, the organizational stability, the organizational power structure, and the kind of understanding of how things are running, that is way more important to Tom Brady than I think a lot of other quarterbacks and players in the NFL, because he has seen it firsthand at how important those things are towards winning championships. So that's the biggest thing that I can't get over is, does he believe that the Chargers can build a championship contender around him, or does he believe so much in himself that he just thinks that he can take any team there? I don't know the answer to that question because I'm not Tom Brady, but it just, to me, that's a difficulty for it for me, is that organization has really for a long, long time not been a good organization. A team that picks up and leaves in the middle of the night from San Diego to LA, and a team that doesn't really compete for Super Bowls and kind of chokes in the playoffs down the stretch and things of that nature. That's not a winning organization. And I just don't know if Brady is willing to make that jump.
Yeah, I think that, and that's why when you, that's part of the reason why I think he comes back to the Patriots, is a lot of these teams, when you inspect them the second and third and fourth reason down, you're still behind the Patriots.
Right.
You know, like Brady, obviously, wherever he's going to go next, he's going to want to win.
Right.
And it's hard to find a place that that's as much of a cinch to win or be in it as the Patriots. You can't really find that team. I mean, there's other teams that are really good, and I'm sure there's plenty of teams where he would go and take him to the playoffs and take him deep into the playoffs. I'm not saying he can't do that. It's just that, you know, there's as far as what the Patriots would need to, you know, satisfy him and stuff like that in terms of, you know, getting more weapons and all that stuff. I think that's easier than going somewhere else and you know, trying to recreate what he has here. So it's, you
it's
know,
learning a whole new, it's also forcing a new offense into an organization also.
Oh yeah.
Because
yeah.
if you sign Tom Brady, you're not signing Tom Brady to run your stuff. You're going to run his stuff, right? He's not coming if you're going to say, you know what, Tom, like, we love you. We want you to sign here, but we're on the West Coast offense.
Yeah. take a look at this playbook and see what you got.
Yeah, he's going to say, no, I'm the offensive coordinator now. We're running an EP system. We're running my system with my plays, and this is how we're going to do it. On the Phillip Rivers side of the coin, because we do need to consider some of these other options, right? Because if the worst does happen, it's a possibility. I think the biggest thing is you're probably going to have to pay Phillip Rivers a decent amount of money. He is a good quarterback still with a big name that's going to draw some interest. Spotrac, which is salary cap site, has him projected at a $24 million a year contract. I just don't see why you would pay Phillip Rivers $24 million a year and not just give that to Tom Brady. Right. Yeah. You know, that just doesn't make much sense to me. So I don't know, just cost wise, unless he's willing to take a big discount to come here and play with Belichick. I just don't see it. The other thing is that he moved his family now permanently to Florida. And there's a couple of teams down there in the Florida or the South area in general, Tennessee, Miami, Jacksonville. These are all teams, potentially Tampa Bay, looking for quarterbacks that are in that neck of the woods that are a little bit closer than Boston is to the Florida area. So I would really look at something more down south for Phillip Rivers if he is going to continue playing. Tampa Bay makes a lot of sense with Bruce Arians. He fits in nicely with that vertical passing game. So I'm interested to see where he ends up. All right, let's talk some positional needs. This is the meat of the show here. We're going to go top five positional needs for the Patriots. We ranked them 1 through 5. I'm going to start at number 5 and work our way up. And what we're talking here is just, it could be future needs. It could be currently right now. So number 5, I would say, is more of a future kind of situation that they need to be looking forward to. And we've been talking on this show since the Naked Bootleg podcast about them getting some replacement safeties for veterans that are aging, like Devin McCourty or Patrick Chung or Daron Harmon as McCourty's kind of backup at free safety. We've been talking about guys for years now of potential draft fits, and I think that they still haven't quite addressed that need yet.
No, and the thing that I'm starting to get sick of when I talk about a Patriots safety situation is they're like, oh, let's get a Patrick Chung replacement.
Right.
And it's always a certain type of guy that can do this and can do that. And it's like, how about just get a good safety?
Yeah.
You know, like, so I think there's enough, like, guys in the draft and stuff that makes sense. But I think they kind of overthink it sometimes. Like the Duke Dawson experiment obviously didn't work. A lot of people saw him as like a Chung replacement. He could do this. He covered guys out of slot. Just pick a guy that can do some good things. Like, he doesn't have to be all things to all people. He doesn't have to replace Patrick Chung right away. You know, can he cover slot receivers? Okay. Is he a good tackler? You know, is he somebody who's good in the deep third? You know, find a guy that's effective.
Yes.
You know, make it simple. You know, like you didn't pick Justin Reed. He's having a fine career down in Houston.
Yeah, Juan Thornhill in Kansas City had a huge rookie year.
Yeah, and those guys are out there, and those guys are out there second round.
Yeah,
you know, the second round defensive back draft curse for the Patriots has kind of built a thing unto its own now. But I do feel like they just got to keep it simple. But don't let your eyes trick you. You know, go with somebody who's just a good, solid college safety with transferable pro skills. You know, somebody that at least is a really good athlete. They seem to be skipping over the really good athletes and picking guys that have some sort of unidentifiable skill. That's what I'd hope for that.
Yeah, you know, there's no way that anybody is going to come in here and replace Devin McCourty or Patrick Chung instantly. Or even, I don't even know if those guys are replaceable in the immediate, you know, kind of short term, next 2 to 3 years, let's say, by a rookie. Maybe if there's a really good rookie that they can get in the first round. I know there's some mocks that have them taking Delpit from LSU or something like that, who's a real potential impact player. But I think the biggest thing is that you look at the role that the safety plays in the Patriots' defense, the deep safety, the free safety, Devin McCourty's role primarily. He is asked to do so many different things. You know, he could come down and cover a tight end or a receiver as a cornerback or a running back out of the backfield. He can play in the box. He can rush the passer on a blitz scheme. He can play the run. He can play the deep third. He can play center field and man free. He can do all these different things. In a lot of safety play with the Patriots, too, remember, is that nothing over your head and nobody running past you either as a ball carrier. You're the last line of defense. And a lot of the reason why the Patriots don't usually get burned for really long runs is because they have great tackling safeties. They have safeties that take good angles, that cover a lot of ground on that back end and can bring guys down, so they prevent those 20-yard runs from becoming 50-yard runs most of the time because of that. So that's a big part of what they do. When there's situations, just to get into a little bit more technically, when there are situations where the edge defender that has the force on the run, that's forcing the run back to the middle of the field, if he for some reason needs to exit that responsibility, Belichick actually asks the safety in the middle of the field against the run to become the force. It's like an impossible task, really, for any safety that's not experienced and doesn't really know what he's looking at. So I agree with you 100% that they just need to find somebody that they can play and develop in one type of role, whether it's playing the deep third, whether it's playing in the slot or in the box or like a money backer spot, whatever the case may be, because there's nobody that's going to be able to come in and play all these different roles. With that said, I think that Juwan Williams has potential to pretend to be a slot guy or a box safety or something like that if he doesn't work out on the boundary. I think that they want him ideally to play outside corner. But if he doesn't work out there, then yeah, I think there is some upside for him moving on to tight ends, moving more closer to the line of scrimmage and closer to the ball. I think that that's potentially a role for him. Terrence Brooks is also under contract, who I like a lot. I think he's a good locker room guy. I think he's a good person to have on your team. And yeah, I know he had a rough game against the Titans, but I think that he's a solid kind of strong safety option as well. He tackles well. He's a special teamer. He knows how to tackle in the open field. He can cover tight ends pretty well for the most part. So they have some short-term kind of option in Terrence Brooks if they need to kind of bolster that safety depth. He added a little bit of safety depth for them this past season. You know, he was pretty solid there for most of the time, besides the wild card game, a couple of plays. There was really two plays. It was a touchdown and then a third down conversion, and we're killing the guy for two plays out of, you know, the 70 that he played.
That's how it works.
I think has some potential, too, in that role. But, yeah, like you said, I would just love to find a way to get a safety in that has a specific skill set that they can feel they can kind of convert or develop into a certain role that will fit this defense. Because when Devin McCourty hangs it up, I'm not saying Devin McCourty is like this transcendent generational type player, but when Devin McCourty moves on or hangs it up, they're going to have to dummy down that safety position a significant amount for the next guy. Because he's been here for a decade. He knows the defense. He's basically an extension of the coaching staff at this point. So they're going to have to dummy it down one way or another. All right, number four. Let's move into the trenches. This is where we love to, you know, our bread and butter here. I really could have put offensive and defensive line in either the three or four spot. They're interchangeable to me. Maybe I should have put offensive line ahead of it now that I'm looking at this list. But number four, we did put offensive line. I think the biggest question, obviously, going into free agency is what's going to happen with Joe Tooney and then the left guard spot beyond that, assuming that he does cash in.
Yeah. When I was looking at this, it's one of those things where the interior offensive line going into last year, we thought had so much depth, and then it really got tested, didn't it? You know, with Andrews getting sick. And, you know, everything that's gone on there.
Yeah, and Yelda didn't really pan out and got flu IR.
I kind of would love to see, like, a good mauling guard who can sometimes play center as well. I'd like to see, like...
Describing Ted Karras in a way. I don't know if he's a mauler. I don't know if I would describe him, but he's a bigger player for center.
Yeah, because I feel like the running game when Devlin wasn't in and stuff, the running game took a step back, and yet I just sort of love for that baseline of the strength of the offense to be that running game, and with the interior offensive line just sort of pushing it forward. I'd love for that to be the next guy. Now, typically when they get a guard and really any offensive line, I think they really like an athletic guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, they don't want just somebody who can just lean on you for four quarters. They want somebody who can get out and block on those screens. That's such a big part of the offense, and, you know, especially when it's really effective. So, you know, I don't know exactly. I haven't really studied too much the offensive line class. I've seen a couple mocks have an interior offensive lineman from Michigan going to the Pats.
Yeah.
But I would think I'd like to see just like this good run blocking guard, you know, just to get that emphasis back in the offense again, because it just sort of felt like it disappeared for too long of stretches this year.
Yeah, I really think the next thing too is there's a lot of, you know, chatter among fans. I'm not saying this is anything legitimate that I'm basing this off of, that Isaiah Wynn could kick inside to left guard and they could shop that left tackle position, you know, maybe go draft somebody that's more of a, has the length and the kind of the measurable boxes checked more so for a left tackle. I don't know why you would necessarily feel the need to do that. I think Wynn was, that was essentially his rookie season, and he was an extremely good rookie. You know, yeah. He was as good as you get for a player that was truly playing his first kind of NFL action. He clearly has the foot speed, and he makes up for the fact that he doesn't have great length and great height with that foot speed and with his ability and his technique and just how sound he is. I would leave him put at left tackle. On the other side, though, you have Marcus Cannon, who's getting up there in age. They can save some money if they can replace and move on from him on the cap. I think it's about $6 million if they cut Marcus Cannon. Now, I think that Marcus Cannon's gotten kind of flown under the radar. He's been a very good right tackle for the Patriots for a long time now, especially as a run blocker. But just in general, if you go and you look, especially when he was playing at his best, where he kind of ranked in the right tackle pantheon in the league, he was always near the top 10 or 15 tackles overall. In right tackle alone, he was always near in the top 10, you know, when he was in the prime of his career. So he's been a very sound player for them over there. We both really loved Yadni Kajust coming out. The plan is to have Yadni Kajust finally on the field. The plan is also to have Yelda Froholt, who I fell in love with during the early parts of training camp. He obviously kind of fizzled out, and then he got the Foxborough flu, and he ends up on IR as a rookie. They probably could have used him, honestly, in hindsight, but it is what it is. Yadni Kajust was truly a redshirt from the get-go, and I think that he has a really good chance of potentially being that right tackle of the future.
Yeah. I'd totally forgotten all about him. Yeah. But yeah, that is somebody that we both really liked, and I was sort of disappointed that, you know, he was hurt and all that. But he's an athletic guy. Like, he's somebody that you watch, it's not like with Wynn where you think, oh yeah, he could be a guard because he's shorter and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I feel like Yadni, like, looks the part.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm very excited to see what he can do. And, you know, the offensive line as a whole, I mean, you know, they're not going to have Skarnecchia.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be interesting to see what that's like. You know, we've seen, you know, that be an issue before. So, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting. I think, but like I said, I'd like this next offensive line they have to be a really good, dominant run-blocking offensive line. Just to round it out a little bit, because I think that's, you know, when, like, the real strong Patriots offensive lines can really run block well. And, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see that.
I can almost guarantee in February that the Patriots are going to draft an offensive lineman at some point in April.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be the first round. I don't know if it's going to be the seventh round. I have no idea. But just the way that it's setting up, the fact that they're probably going to lose Tooney. They might lose Ted Karras. They have David Andrews coming back off a pretty serious off-field injury that they're going to have to worry about.
Yeah.
They're definitely – Marcus Cannon's getting up there in age. They have replacements in Kajus and Froholt and House that I wanted to mention and bring back up. But I do think that there's going to be a draft pick used on an offensive lineman at some point. They care too much about the trenches.
Yeah, I'm sure there's like a Western Athletic Conference center somewhere that they got their eye on. Some random guy that, you know, they just fall in love with and they'll pick way higher than everybody else expects and, you know, will drive everybody crazy on Twitter for a week.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move over to number three, or move on to number three, I should say, which is the defensive line. Again, I think these could have been interchangeable. Maybe offensive line should have been above defensive line, but regardless, defensive line, I think the biggest thing that stood out to me when I was kind of planning for this show and putting this together, they only dressed four true defensive linemen in the wild card round. Four. They had Lawrence Guy, Danny Shelton, Adam Butler, and Dietrich Wise. That was it. Now, granted, this past year's team had more linebackers than they knew what to do with, right? They had stand-up guys, they had off-ball linebackers, they had the linebacker position covered, hence why they were more of a 3-4 team. But we talked a lot about it after that loss to the Titans, was the fact that the Patriots really couldn't go four down defensive linemen, especially on first and second down, because Adam Butler and Dietrich Wise are not first down players in this league. They are pass rushing guys. They're second and long, third down, situational, before the 2-minute drill, that kind of stuff, head early or head late, and the team is passing. That's what their bread and butter is. So they were really asking those guys. Butler played a lot of 3-4 end this year, Wise as well, to be something that they weren't necessarily fit to be. I like Byron Coward a lot. I think that he's a stronger player, a guy that could be more forceful against the run, but his college tape is just wildly inconsistent. There's tons and tons of splash plays where he's just mauling guys and blowing over offensive linemen, and then there's stretches of play where he disappears and he's playing too high and he's just not converting any of that power. So maybe they worked him in. Derek Rivers was still hanging on. He's still there. He's trying to make a comeback. He's still on the depth chart, at least worth mentioning. But back to that wild card round, they only dressed four true defensive linemen. They get gashed on the running game. Obviously, the defense wasn't the reason why they lost the game, but that is what happened. So I do think that they could go out and really get a defensive end to replace Trey Flowers, if you want to use that terminology, or just add some more depth, versatility, and a guy that can play on all three downs.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The, you know, a guy like Butler, like, they can move him around so much, and like
he's a great player.
Yeah, they get the most out of him, let's put it that way. But it would be, this is kind of like the safety discussion we were talking about, like, hey, can you just keep it simple, give me an end, you know what I mean? You know, just somebody that can stay on the field. But I kind of feel like the Patriots are very much love the fact that they're so scheme versatile that they want those types of guys.
Sure.
So, you know, it'll be interesting. I wonder if they would get a Chandler Jones type, not in terms of ability, but like just a, this is our defensive end, and he'll be on there for first down, second down, and third down, and he's pretty much going to stay out here for the whole game, and you're going to have to block him with your left tackle or right tackle.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Chandler Jones, because I think there's like this notion that when he was with the Patriots that he wasn't a great run player. He was inconsistent. He faded in the playoffs, you know, all that kind of narrative, right? Yeah. You know, he wasn't a big game player, all that kind of stuff. That you couldn't find evidence of that, right? You can find evidence where he wasn't the best against the run. Early on in his career, he certainly played too high and got pushed off the ball a lot as a run defender. But at the same time, that guy played like 90% of the snaps every single week.
Right.
He was out there every game, all game, and he was coming at you. And then he goes to Arizona. It's the same type of thing over there in Arizona in a different scheme that's more suited to him. But overall, still the same thing. Length, athleticism, get off. They haven't had a guy like that. Trey Flowers isn't that guy either. So they really haven't had a guy like that since Chandler, because Trey Flowers is not as long, and he's just a different type of player. So it's just that has been something that I think that a lot of people have been expecting them to draft early, to put, take a first round end and really have a guy that can play three downs.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's again, it's like, do they want an end who is sort of lining up in the same spot, first down, second down, and third down, no matter what area of the field? Or do you want a guy who's maybe not as great at that position, but he can kick inside, he can destroy guards, you know?
Well, I think that that's what they tried to do this year, right? And this is a great discussion because I think this is discussions that they have themselves. One thing that Brett Bielema told me when I was talking to him when he was still the D-line coach was that it is an extremely unique scheme for defensive linemen in New England. They're asked to do things very differently than most college programs, certainly, and even teams in the pros. Just the techniques that they ask them to use. Adam Butler, for instance, he's up there among the league leaders in the amount of times he's double teamed because of the way that they run their scheme, not because they think that Adam Butler's Aaron Donald. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not like they're going into the game plan and they're saying, we need to double this guy. He's unblockable on single block. You know, that's not what's happening. But the way the Patriots want you to double team Adam Butler, because when you double team Adam Butler, now they're wrapping a linebacker around him on a stunt and there's a wide open lane to the quarterback, right? You know, something like that. So their scheme is really, really unique. So what they got is they got four guys or five guys this year that could really thrive within different alignments, right? Different techniques, playing over the nose, playing outside, whatever they wanted them to do, and were well versed and understood what they were asking them to do within the framework of the scheme. It's why Michael Bennett didn't work here. You know, it's why Michael Bennett didn't last, was because he couldn't really grasp that and couldn't figure out a role for himself here. So it's they, I feel like, do sometimes just want that versatility and want that ability to, that selflessness and that scheme fit to, okay, you're going to stuff the run. You're going to stuff the A gaps, Danny Shelton. You're not going to get a ton of opportunities to rush the passer, Lawrence Guy, but we're going to want you to just plug the A gaps and make sure we don't get run on. That's your role on this defense. And when we're rushing the passer, if it's play action on early down or whatever the case may be, you're eating blocks for the linebackers to go and make plays. Yeah. And you're going to have that certain kind of mentality at times, and the versatility to move those guys around and do different things with them and do run different schemes, different games up front is all great. But at the same time, that Chandler Jones, 70 snaps a game, we're coming at you. We're going to, you know, get after the quarterback. That there's something to be said for that type of player too.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting. It is kind of, you know, more what do you want from me type deal. You know, it's like, what do the Patriots really want? I think, like, if I had to guess, it just seems to me like they'd rather have the versatile guy. Like,
I think so too, because they go into their game planning meetings and they say to themselves, you know, what's the best part of this offense? What's the part that we need to expose along the offensive line? You know, how can we do this? And if your guard is a bad pass blocking guard, then they're going to put their best pass rusher over the guard, regardless of what position he plays.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting how they do that. And it does make it fun for us when we're sort of breaking down like game tape and seeing what they're doing. It's like, oh, what will they try now?
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, it's pretty, but it makes it frustrating in terms of drafting, because then how do you know when it's a college player that has that? I mean, a lot of times they're proving that stuff when they're going up against the whiteboard and they're sort of drawing it up to them in meetings. So
it's really fun, because they'll, like in the Super Bowl against the Rams, they knew the Rams guards were not great pass blockers. So they just put Dante Hightower and right on top of one of the guards in the entire game. And they had him rush the passer basically the entire game from a stand-up on the line of scrimmage type role, but in the interior of the line instead of on the end of the line, like you're accustomed to seeing a guy like that play, because that was the weakness in the team. And by having these versatile pieces that might not necessarily be there, some of the parts is better than maybe the individual talent. It doesn't really matter, but I think that at some point in time, you got to be able to go four down. You got to be able to dress more than four guys for a wild card round when you're going up against a back like Derrick Henry. And when you have two guys that are Butler and Wise, who you know are not necessarily run stuffing ends, you know, so I think that is a part of the team that they definitely need to address. Let's keep going here and go to the wide receivers, tight ends, playmakers, pass catchers, whatever words you want to use. We know they need them, right? We know they need them. I don't think that's the matter of how this is the biggest need or the second biggest need, depending on which way you want to look at it. To me, I think it's how are they going to go about it, right? How are they going to go about addressing this need and getting some more firepower on offense? Because we know that they need to.
Yeah. Well, do you remember there was that time, it was a press conference a couple years ago when Belichick was talking about the Steelers, and he said, I could draft, you know, I could draft for the Steelers. I know what the, because he sort of knows what they look for. And, you know, the problem pretty much with this group of receivers this year was separation. The guys weren't open. And if they were not that open, then maybe Brady could fit it to you if he trusted you. You know, and then there's the building of the trust and all that stuff. And an easy way to get separation is pure speed. And I was wondering if they would go for one of these pure speed guys in the draft or a pure speed guy in the free agency. So, I mean, it's it can be easy to scout, you know. You can tell when the fast guys are. And
pick this the guy that can fly.
Right. And, you know, obviously, and again, this is, again, one of those questions of preference. But, you know, we talked about Van Jefferson from Florida, you know, not a speed guy, but a technician, you know, in terms of a route runner. You know, will the Patriots have that sort of dilemma again, where there's two guys and they got the Jalen Reagor, is that
from TCU,
speed guy,
Reagor, KJ Hamler from Penn State's a speed guy, Ayuk from Arizona State's a speed guy. There's a lot of good speed guys in this draft. Devin Duvani from Texas, speed guy.
So are they looking at, you know, one of those guys on one hand, and then they look on the other hand and they get a guy like Jefferson who can't really burn, but he can get open. He can create separation with his route running. I think that's kind of the question for me this draft is when they draft a receiver, if they draft a receiver, if they pick a guy at a free agency, wherever, are they going to go for that speed guy? Are they going to go for that guy that can take the top off the defense or just run routes fast enough where he can just lose a guy? Or are they going to go to that route runner, that guy who's sort of more of a technician, the more of a fundamentals guy? You know, again, this is a question that we've seen them answer many times before with other people, but, you know, I think that's going to be one of those things. You know, speed and getting open, speed after the catch. You know, are they going to go after a 4-3 guy from the combine or something like that? I think it's going to be really interesting to see.
I agree. And I also just think it's interesting, the conversation, because of what you're talking about, because early in the draft, their history, even though they haven't drafted wide receivers in particular that many times early in the draft, it's been N'Keal Harry, Chad Jackson, Aaron Dobson. Very similar players, right? Big physical outside guys, big catch radiuses, really good size speed combinations, but raw players that have ways to go with the technique. They haven't necessarily taken a guy early in the draft that's a smaller speed demon that can just get open, really, since Deion Branch, and that worked out really well. So that's maybe where they need to go back to. But later in the draft, that's when they'll sacrifice speed and size and that whole kind of checkbox combination of, like, this is if we were going to build a receiver in a lab. If you're going to build a wide receiver in a lab, he's going to look like N'Keal Harry. You know, N'Keal Harry looks like he's a god. He's chiseled. He's huge. He's fast. He's strong. He's going to look like an NFL wide receiver. When you go and you see him, you put on pads and you stand next to the guy, he looks like an NFL player. You know, that's what you expect. But at the same time, when they go later in the draft, they go with guys like a Jacoby Myers or someone like that. And those guys seem to play better in this system for whatever reason, because maybe they're a little bit smarter. Maybe they're a little bit more technically sound. Whatever the case may be, with the wide receiver position, I'm really fascinated to see if they just go with veterans, if they just make trades and sign guys in free agency and they say, screw the draft, we're not good at it right now, or there's nobody in the draft that we really love that we feel confident about. We tried it with N'Keal. We hope it still works out, but we're not 100% sold, right? So let's just say screw the draft with wide receiver position. And let's go after free agents and trades. I think if Brady's back, and especially if he gets a deal done before the March 18th start of the league year, and they have that extra little wiggle room, I really think that's the way that they're going to go. I don't know how they're going to fit in under the cap. I would go and look for guys, you know, I say this all the time, but I'd go and look for guys that are on the last year of their rookie deals. Guys like Cooper Kupp, Kenny Golladay, some of those players are expiring contracts that are about to get a big payday that maybe their team would rather take the draft pick than pay them the big money. And the Patriots can kind of get them on a similar Brandon Cooks type situation, a 1-year rental with a franchise tag option after that, and go about it that way. Because I think that they're better off doing that. If you're signing Brady back, which is the assumption, you're in a short window, right? You know you're in a small, tight window, 1 to 2 years to win another Super Bowl. I don't know if they have enough time unless they can really draft a guy. Let's say they get Justin Jefferson and he just is amazing right away. That's you know, kind of what you would have to bank on, right? Is that you're drafting a guy early that can make a huge, huge difference right away. I want to talk about the tight end position, though, because I think a lot of people are just talking about wide receivers, and there's not a ton of conversation about tight end. If you ask me, they need a 2010 redux, a complete overhaul of the position. I want Matt LaCoste to be tight end 3 next year. I don't want him even close to the field unless there's injuries. I think drafting 2 tight ends, signing a tight end, and then drafting 1, doing something of that kind of mixture combination. I think they need to bring in 2 tight ends that are better than any of the guys they currently have, is I guess the short way of saying it.
Yes, and I would expect the most they'd get is 1 through the draft and 1 through free agency. And another thing with the tight ends is, like, I think people are get sucked into this thing where it's like, okay, you had Gronk, you have to replace Gronk. It's like, no, you just need a good tight end.
Sure.
You just need a good tight end.
Like, there are some good guys in this draft that fit their mold, you know, Adam Trautman, or if it's Cole Kmet, or if it's Thad Moss, you know, there are guys that check the boxes. I don't think there's any excuses this year for them to pass on a tight end early.
Right.
I'm sick of it. You got to draft somebody.
And I think a guy like Trautman can be there in a reasonable spot. I don't think they have to necessarily get him in the first round. Of course, you know, it's so early. Who knows? Maybe blows up the combine.
Right.
Becomes the first round pick, whatever. But my point is that, you know, if you get a tight end who's a good receiver, he doesn't necessarily need to be a dominant blocker. He can be passable. You know, he can be a replacement level. You know, just sort of there, you know, because you're just not going to get a Gronkowski. So, you know, find a tight end who can do at least one thing really well. There's a lot of good receiving tight ends. And you know, again, like we already talked about Trautman before on this podcast, but I like him a lot. If you come away with him in the second round or third round, then, man, you got to take that, because, I mean, I think he's got the potential to be a very good player.
I think Cole Kmet's in a similar category, the tight end from Notre Dame, who's an underclassman, so we didn't talk about him on the Senior Bowl podcast. He is a very similar kind of build. I think he's a little bit shorter than Trautman, but he's 6'4", 250, you know, same type of size. Definitely more of an upside as a receiver than a blocker right now. His blocking technique needs a ton of work. But as a receiver, he's very, very good. Stretches the seam, creates after the catch, just a bruising kind of player, can go and got a great catch radius, make adjustments on the ball. The point of the matter is that we can sit here, and last year we did the same exact thing, the year before we did the same exact thing. This podcast is a big fan of guys like Mark Andrews and those types of people back, you know, in their drafts. There's no excuse in the second and third rounds for the Patriots to pass on all of these guys again. They had five picks in the first 3 rounds last year, and they didn't draft a single tight end. And then they went and they watched Dawson Knox in their own division have a great rookie year for the Bills. In their own division. I mean, there's just it is what it is at this point. No one's going to replace Gronkowski, but they cannot go out there again with what they had last year.
Yeah, that's just barren. There's good tight ends, and you know, so many of them now are sort of flex guys and H-backs in the college game with the spread.
Sure.
But
if they take a guy like a Bryson Hopkins, though, who's probably going to end up as the tight end 1 consensus, he is a flex tight end. He's not going to be an inline blocker at the NFL level. You know, he's a chess piece. He's a playmaker in the passing game. Even if they take a guy like that, okay, you take a guy like that, then you draft a Thad Moss in the fourth round as your blocking tight end, or you sign a blocking tight end, and you kind of combine those two players into one, that sort of thing. Just getting a guy that can make a difference and make an impact in the passing game is going to go a long way for this offense, even if it's not a Gronkowski level.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be all things to all people. If he's a good receiving tight end, take him. You know, it's an upgrade.
Right.
So, you know.
Bryson Hopkins or Hunter Bryant. The tight end class at free agency, I don't think it's that strong, quite frankly. There's a couple of guys that, listen, Austin Hooper is going to get paid. You know, I'd love to have Austin Hooper here. He's a good all-around tight end. He's obviously a guy that's on the upside, you know, going on the upswing, I should say. He's going to get over $10 million a year.
Yeah.
In free agency. I just don't see that happening with the Patriots. Eric Ebron's an interesting kind of count on him being healthy type thing. He obviously had that great season in Indianapolis 2 years ago where he put up some serious numbers. I think he had double-digit touchdowns that year. But he's another one of those guys that's gets banged up a little bit. And also the production has never really matched the raw talent with him. But at the same time, he's an interesting kind of former first-round pick. It's a Patriot move, right? You take a former first-round pick that's had good seasons, that's flashed at times, and you try to make the most out of him. And other than that, it's Hunter Henry, who I think the Chargers are probably going to try very, very hard to keep and might even franchise tag him for a year because the tight end tag is really, really low. It's the lowest tag that there is at about $10 million for a season, which isn't terrible for a team. And then after that, it is Barron. We're talking about Greg Olsen, who is obviously in his situations unique, Vance McDonald, Vernon Davis, who's retiring, Jason Witten, who's going back to Dallas or retiring, Tyler Eifert, Charles Clay. I mean, we're not talking about any great players here other than maybe a guy like Austin Hooper. So be very interesting to see what the Patriots do. I would overhaul it in the draft and take two guys in the draft like they did in 2010, but we're also been crying for them to do that for about 3 years now, and it hasn't happened. So we'll see what happens. All right, last one here, quarterbacks, obviously number one. Until the Patriots find a replacement for Tom Brady, and maybe they already have in Jared Stidham. I wrote about him last week, and I am confident that they at least have something in Jared Stidham. I'm not sure if he's a franchise quarterback or not, but he's certainly worth keeping around and developing. Until they find the next guy and they feel confident that they found the next guy, the kind of the quest for the Brady replacement is the number one need for this team going forward.
Yeah. And again, that's, you know, if Brady goes, there's some guys. I mean, this is a pretty, you know,
it's a very good quarterback free agent class.
It really is.
It's unique because it really doesn't happen very often teams don't get rid of their franchise quarterbacks.
No, this doesn't happen.
No.
And the name that I like, and it's now I'll have to preface this by saying not a lot of people like on the same wavelength as me on this, but I have always felt that Teddy Bridgewater is better than he might be, than he might show. Like whether it's high school, college, I've always liked his game. I'm just a sucker for accuracy, and he's always in the 60s. You know, I think he completed something close to 68% of his passes this year. His first couple of years, he had some interception problems, but I like his game. I like how accurate he is. I like his release. I like how he is effective in the short and intermediate passing game. And is like, he's got that sort of skill set that would fit in the Patriots offense pretty well. I think he's a smart guy. I think he's always been sort of the same quarterback. And, you know, if he's out there, for instance, a guy like Philip Rivers, you might think I'm crazy, but I'd rather have Bridgewater. You know,
it's not crazy because he's cheaper. You can give him a kind of an incentives-based deal, and if he starts 16 games and he tears it up, then good. You know, that's what you want him to do anyway. So if you have to pay him the money and he hits all his incentives, then so be it.
Yeah. So I think he's a smart quarterback that in terms of like timing routes and like noticing the coverage and getting the ball out of his hands quickly. I've just always liked them. Teddy Bridgewater is sort of my name for that.
Has been a great fit since his draft year. you know, has always been a great fit for the Patriots. That short, intermediate accuracy, quick release, good decision maker, can kind of just get the ball out to the guys that he needs to get the ball out to. The offense the Patriots run doesn't ask to get vertical too often, and that's kind of been a weakness of his. The deep ball accuracy and also just the arm strength has never really been there going back to his college days. And this offense doesn't really it attacks you more horizontally than it does vertically. So he doesn't necessarily need to worry too much about throwing a 65-yard bomb to a receiver down the field, you know, all the time or even a lot of the time. The other name that I would want to throw out there is Mariota. And I think that there's really the reason why is two things. One, I would absolutely love to see Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels be able to play 11 on 11 and have a quarterback that can run, because it's not going to be Brady, right? You're not going to get a guy that can pocket pass like Brady can. So you might as well just blow up the whole thing and do something different. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think it'd be a lot of fun to see a quarterback and let them play an offense that's similar to, you know, something not necessarily going full Baltimore, right? I'm not asking them to go Veer and wing T here on us, but something that is a little bit more kind of updated and with the times and kind of going along with the trend of more mobile quarterbacks, something that resembles loosely, you know, what teams do like Arizona or Dallas or someone like that, that plays with the quarterback's run threat as a part of the offense. I think a lot, Bill Belichick will be the first one to tell you that mobile quarterbacks, as long as they can pass with some sort of accuracy, are extremely difficult to defend because you have to account for them on the field like they're another eligible receiver. They're a sixth, you know, kind of playmaker on the field or an 11th guy on the field, where one defender is always going to, most of the time, is going to be responsible for the quarterback. And that takes that one defender out of doing other things, whether it's playing a zone drop or it's playing man coverage on a guy or it's blitzing or whatever the case may be. That just takes the defender away from it. I love to see Mariota in this offense along with Bridgewater. I think that those options, I can tell you with 100% confidence, Andy Dalton's name has not been discussed with the Patriots. This is something that's getting out there on sports radio, and it makes zero sense, both cap-wise, it makes zero sense for the Patriots to give up an asset to bring Andy Dalton here, which I just can't fathom. Right? Bill Belichick's going to give up a draft pick for Andy Dalton when he knows that the Bengals are drafting Joe Burrow and they have no choice but to dump Dalton. Yeah. You know, come on. I think the Patriots would probably take on Dalton if they might be more interested in Dalton, I should say, if he's outright released by the Bengals and he's looking for like a prove it deal, right? And he wants to start somewhere, have a chance to start somewhere, and they're going to bring him in to compete with Stidham and push Stidham with a veteran or something like that, or push a rookie with a veteran. They have not discussed a trade for Andy Dalton. They're not going to trade something like crazy, like a third or a fourth round pick for Andy Dalton. None of those things are happening. So until something else changes, I'll let people know, but I can tell you that that's not been discussed. The draft is an interesting kind of look at it, though. We talked about Tua before we came on. I believe it was before we started recording. He's the only name in the first round that I can think of, other than Burrow, of course, who's not going to be on the board. Tua is the only one that I can think of that I would say, okay, take him in the first round, right?
Yeah.
You know, do it. If they have to move up from 23 to 16 to do it, I would do it. I think that if he checks out medically for all these kind of steps, he's going to go ahead in front of the doctors at the combine. He just got in front of the doctors earlier this week, and they said that he's, you know, making progress and on the right wavelength that he should be on. The combine will be another check-in. I think the hope is before the draft at some point in April to hold a pro day and let him throw and show what he can do. If he gets to that point where he's throwing in April for teams, that's it. He's going to go in the top 10.
Yeah, I think we were talking about this before we got started, is just how crazy these placements are from month to month, you know, like sure. Where a few months ago, you know, Tua was the number one pick in the draft, no questions asked, and then the medical stuff and Joe Burrow and this and that. And so, you know, I think I'm curious to see which teams in the top five would be open to trading back, you know, for multiple picks or something like that. I'm curious because I think that Miami definitely wants Tua, right? But sure. they're what, five or six?
They're six now. They lost. They won those games. The Week 17 win, that was a killer for their draft stock. I think they went from like 3 to 6 that weekend.
Yeah. Like I think somebody like Detroit is gonna field a bunch of offers. Because I think, you know, Detroit was there, what, 3? And they, you know, they might not, I mean, it would be in their best interest to make it seem like they would take Tua, because, you know, more people would probably want to trade. But I think I just feel like, you know, Tua is one of those guys that, you know, if it weren't for the injury, you know, he might be the number one pick. And also interested to see guys like, you know, Herbert and Love and guys like that, to see how they do. You know, I feel like every one of the quarterbacks that we talk about so far that's still in it, is they're just going to keep going up and up and up, because that's what happens with quarterbacks.
Justin Herbert, to me, if Josh Allen goes in the top 10, I don't see how Justin Herbert doesn't.
But yeah, the thing is with Herbert, he's a lot of NFL GMs and scouts and decision makers are going to look at Herbert and see him throw and see how hard he throws the ball. And they're going to see that in person and be like, I want him in my stadium, because he's a big guy, he's athletic, and he can chuck it hard. He's probably
He is Josh Allen, but I think with more kind of functionalism early on in his career.
Oh, yeah.
An ability to run an offense early on in his career that resembles an NFL offense. I think he has a little bit more accuracy than Josh Allen did.
Oh, I think he 100% does, yeah.
I think he's a better prospect than Josh Allen, so I just don't see if Josh Allen went as high as he did. And it wasn't just the Bills that had him graded that high in that draft. Like, he was going at some point soon in that draft if Buffalo didn't take him. So I just don't see how Herbert maybe gets outside the top 10 and he's taken, you know, 12th or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you look at the top 10, let's just run through this quickly, because I like your idea of teams trading into it, right? Bengals at number 1 is going to be Joe Burrow.
Right.
The Redskins at number 2, they have Dwayne Haskins, right?
Yeah.
But if Tua checks every single box for them, I don't know. That could be interesting.
I think there's too much interest in Chase Young for him not to go second.
Okay, that's fair. Detroit at number 3, there's been chatter about them wanting to or considering moving on from Matthew Stafford, or at least planning for the future with moving on from Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, see, I think if that's out, I think that's like just strategy. I think teams are going to want to trade with them. You know,
they're a team that has a ton of holes. That's probably not just a plug in a quarterback away from,
right,
you know, being a contender. So I tend to agree with you.
I feel like if the Dolphins come away with this draft without Tua, they'll be so disappointed, because they've been offered for so long.
Then the Giants are at 4, and they have Daniel Jones, and that's their quarterback, right? Yeah. They're locked into Daniel Jones. I don't think that they're going to pull an Arizona Cardinals where they, you know, they trade Daniel Jones and take Tua. Right? I don't think so. They might. And then come the Dolphins at number 5.
They have to get Tua. Like, they've been.
The question is.
Yeah.
The question is you have L.A. Chargers at 6, who are just told everybody that they're moving on from Phillip Rivers. And Tom Telesco, their GM, is claiming that they like their in-house candidates, which is okay. Number 7 is the Carolina Panthers, who might move on from Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Number 8 is Arizona, who are set at quarterback. 9 is Jacksonville, who need a quarterback. And 10 are the Browns, who need a quarterback. So the point is that the sweepstakes for Tua starts at 2, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And the Redskins, I think, if they're not going to draft a quarterback, they're going to be the team that's going to end up getting a haul. And it might be from Miami to leapfrog everybody else and guarantee that you're going to get Tua. And I think that that's really going to be kind of where the draft starts, because we can tell you now, you know, on Valentine's Day week Joe Burrow is going number 1 overall. That's right at the name on the card. It's done. So number 2, I think, is really where the draft starts, because either Washington's going to surprise the whole world and pull a Josh Rosen type situation and trade Dwayne Haskins and keep Tua or whatever, right, and take Tua themselves, or somebody's going to have to trade into that spot to leapfrog Miami.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be shocked if Miami doesn't move up somehow, because
they have tons of picks. They have all these picks in the first round.
Yeah. They just don't want to risk it. They're so into Tua. You know, they spent so much
I know.
You know, effort just getting into that spot. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't see them not coming away with Tua. But then there's, you know, all these other teams. Herbert will be interesting. Like you said, like, I mean, Josh Allen had the strong arm, but like, how many times in his film did you, you know, see the times where he would just not be anywhere close?
Still does it. I mean, listen, he's come a long way. And it's a great testament. Young quarterback should go watch Josh Allen's footwork in college and then watch his footwork now, because that's how they rebuilt him. They rebuilt him from the bottom up. This has nothing to do with anything between the eyes and his brain or his arm or his upper body or anything. This is all to do with his footwork in the pocket. He's throwing from such a better and more consistent base down in and down out that his accuracy has improved quite a bit.
Yeah, he's much better now than I thought he'd be at this stage.
Absolutely.
Because he looked like a train wreck accuracy-wise, and Herbert's way further along than that than Allen was at this point. So I don't know. I think that there's intrigue all around. I'm sure there's, mid-round candidates for the quarterback position the Patriots will look at too. But, you know, so much of this is up in the air because of the Brady situation. So, you know, there's guys that you look at and you like, and then there's, you know, you wonder what exactly the Patriots would do to get a talent like that. And, you know, but the most realistic one in that scenario that I like right now is Bridgewater.
I don't hate it. I'm, you know, part of me obviously is tied to Tom Brady and doesn't want to see him go anywhere. And I would, as the fan in me, would be devastated to see him playing in a different uniform. Devastated. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, right? But at the same time, something different is not always bad. And it's not going to be as good as Brady. It's not going to be as good as Brady. No one's saying that. But a Bridgewater or a Mariota or a young quarterback, it's going to be fun to see Bill Belichick with a different quarterback. Yeah. You know, you can go back to Cleveland. You can go back to 2000 when he had Bledsoe. You can go to, you know, 08 with Matt Castle and see kind of glimpses of it here and there. But it would be really kind of fascinating to see. And I do think that with Bridgewater and Mariota, especially maybe even Jameis Winston, the Patriots are going to go back to their draft grades on those guys, because they're not going to look at it, I don't think, necessarily of like, you know, what do they do in different systems, right? Because I don't know how much that really matters. It's right. Kind of what they can project them to do in the Patriots system. They're obviously going to look at matchups and, if you know, the game and the poise and all that kind of stuff from their NFL games. That's obviously going to be really important. But at the same time, I do think that if they, let's say they were abnormally high on Teddy Bridgewater and we just didn't know it because they didn't have a chance really to draft him, or they didn't want to draft him. I think they did pass on him in that draft, so I'm not sure if they're necessarily abnormally high on him. But maybe Marcus Mariota's that guy, right? They had him as the consensus number one player in that draft, or the easy pick of number one player in that draft. I think that that matters for how they view these guys now. And if they think that that guy was that talented then they can be the team that really untaps that talent. And Mariota, Bridgewater, these guys have good seasons of NFL tape. You know, seasons of NFL tape where they're better than average starting quarterbacks. Okay, we've been going on for over an hour at this point, as we normally do. Yeah. Do you have anything you want to plug or just talk about or anything at all?
No, I think, you know, it's funny that it started back up again, but spring football for some of the local teams is going to get going again. And yeah, that'll be interesting. And hey, we're just gonna be nose deep in film.
Yes.
You know, and just gonna be rewatching and rewatching stuff, and breaking down players and stuff. And I can't wait.
Absolutely. If you want to go on my Twitter feed right now, at Easy Lazar, for those that don't know, I'm sure all of you do know if you're listening to the podcast for over an hour. I just did a thread on Thad Moss, did an audio breakdown of his blocking, the first audio breakdown of draft season for me. His blocking is really, really freaking impressive. You know, he's a guy that they moved all around the formation. I mean, you watched a ton of LSU games. Yeah. It wasn't just hand in the dirt, I'm going to blow over the guy in front of me. You know, he's blocking on the move. He's wham blocking. He's doing different blocking type of schemes. He's blocking on the perimeter. He's blocking in line. They used him as a weapon in the running game to really set the tone. So go check out that thread that I did on him. Cole Kmet thread is up. Adam Trotman, we're going to talk about him a ton throughout this entire process. That thread is up. done a bunch of wide receivers as well, over 20 of them at this point, too, if you want to go check that out. That's kind of been my focus in the lead up to the combine, is to make sure I know those two position groups inside and out so I can go and see what I can find out at the combine from those guys and go from there. Also, when I watched LSU really quickly, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the number one running back in this draft, and I'm not going to hear anything else about it.
Oh, wow. I like it.
DeAndre Swift is a really good player. I know he's going to be kind of the consensus number one, I'm sure. But every time, even over Joe Burrow, every time you watch an LSU game, it's Edwards-Helaire who pops. You know, it's just unbelievable. His ability, his agility, his lateral quickness, his jump cuts are insane. His vision is insane. His pass catching ability is insane.
I think he had the best spin move in college football.
Excellent spin move. But I think that the thing that stood out to me the most about him was his pass catching ability. I knew about all the stuff as a ball carrier pretty much from watching it live, you know, but his ability that they can move him all around the formation. You get him one-on-one on a linebacker and the linebacker's toast every single time.
Yeah.
So he's an exceptional player.
And an incredible on blitz pickup.
Yeah.
Pass blocking. He's like so dependent. He's like the most pro ready. In terms of, and there's guys that are faster. There's guys that have you know this or that over him. But in terms of being pro ready, and you know doing the things that you ask of a pro running back, he's so ready for that. I mean, he does all those things very well.
The combination of the running back position, not to get into a whole spiel about running backs, but the combination about the running back position at this point is, can you create your own yards by either being elusive or running through guys, and can you contribute in the passing game? If you can't do those two things, then I don't think you can go in the first round anymore. Yeah. Just the way that the position is going. And I think Edwards-Helaire really fits that. On CLNSmedia.com, I wrote about Brady today. I'm going to continue to write about Brady until Brady signs somewhere. I apologize in advance, but that's just the world that we live in. It's too good to pass up on. So there'll be tons of Brady stuff there. I'm also going to start pumping out some combine profiles, players that I think that you should look into or know before the events start in Indy. And then obviously I'm counting down the days until I get to go to Indy, because that's going to be great. And the combine is like my Super Bowl. It's, I think in a lot of ways, to me, it's better than the Super Bowl, believe it or not. And I can't wait to be there in Indy. And then obviously me and Adam will be on the podcast going all the way through the draft and even after the draft, covering all the offseason moves for the Patriots. We'll be back next week with a preview of that NFL scouting combine in Indianapolis, a full preview here on the pod. Then after that, after we get back from Indy and the combine and things like that, we'll get into those positional previews where we break down quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and go the distance all the way to the draft. And it's going to be here before you know it, so we got a lot of film to grind. So on that note, signing off for Adam Kirchner, I'm Adam Lazar. Thanks for listening.